Friday. Well, it's a happy Friday that we're recording it because the snow's outside. Emma and I are trying to get in the Christmas spirit. How are you, Emma? Are you trying to get in the Christmas spirit?
I'm so in the Christmas spirit. I've had a Christmassy week. It's been lovely.
You have, yes. This is the second week in a row I haven't introduced myself. I'm Charlotte Henry, and that, of course, is my lovely co-host, Emma Bunnell, who, if you don't mind me saying, seemed to have a lovely night going to Wicked, which is one of the only, like, maybe three musicals I actually like.
Yeah, I love a good musical, but this was, and I've seen Wicked several times, but this was...
It's the only musical I've seen more than once.
Oh, well, there you go. That's high praise indeed. For Christmas, me and my sister have a kind of deal that we've got enough stuff. I took her and my niece to Wicked.
Nice. That is a great present. That is a lovely evening out.
And they loved it. It was so good.
That is great. You managed to get there, which is good because, you know, we're going to talk about strikes. So happily, I'm pleased that they didn't stop your trip.
Yeah, TfL were not.
TfL was fine. I got into town. But it's the RMT who, the day we're recording, have started a 48-hour strike. The day before, the Royal College of Nursing had a 12-hour strike. It's the first, and certainly the most significant in that union's history.
It's the only strike outside of Northern Ireland in their history.
Yeah, and I didn't realise this, but until 1995, I think they had a formal no strike policy. So there's a lot. I mean, we've picked out those two. They've been the most high profile, but there's lots of things. We've seen things like the Royal Mail. There's been strikes around the Royal Mail.
Going on strike.
Yeah, paramedics.
Ambulance workers, yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of stuff to go into and a lot of stuff to unpack. And, you know, Emma and I think we've discussed it when we were planning the show, did discuss it and very clearly disagreed on it. But my take on it, and then you can tell me all the reasons why I'm wrong, is...
There will be many.
Maybe less than you think. You know, I believe in the right to join a union. That is obviously true because I'm a member of one, and very happily so. And I think, I mean, if you look back in the history of what unions have achieved for workers of all kinds, there are huge things. You know, I think the minimum wage was a trade union demand that got done, wasn't it? All sorts of things that... Yes, absolutely. Yeah. But you don't have to work 7 days a week. Absolutely. So, you know, all things that we would think are, many things that we would think are good and improve the lives of many people in lots of ways have come from the trade union movement. And I do actually believe in the right to strike. You know, you do have the right to withdraw your labour if you feel you're not being treated properly. You do have, and the right to do so collectively. But the problem is I genuinely feel uncomfortable when the strikes actually happen. This is the paradox of it. I believe in
you believe in the right to strike.
Yes, and I'm just always uncomfortable.
You don't believe that it should ever be exercised.
No, actually, that's not right either. I just think it depends on who it is.
That was the last strike you supported.
Yes. No, that's quite an interesting point. There's a lot that do make me feel generally uncomfortable. That's an absolutely fair point. And I would say, actually, it tends to mean a failure on all sides, like not just the union that are striking and have taken that piece of action, but also, and I think we particularly see this with what's happened with the Royal College of Nursing. Like, it does seem to be, it's normally a failure on all sides for this to happen. And I do also think that the, you know, most of the professions that we're talking about here do have a legitimate case and things they are legitimately aggrieved about. So for, again, the nursing one, I think, is the one that is probably has the most public support and also is the one that I'm most troubled by, because I do genuinely think that there is a risk to life from it. I know they're supporting, you know, very important, like, emergency actions, and, you know, they are conducting critical care, supporting critical care, aren't they, the nurses? That is not what's being withdrawn. You know, things like radiotherapy, then, you know, as part of the strike, they didn't conduct those sessions and so on. But obviously also there's huge public support for nurses, and quite rightly, because they have frankly long been underpaid and undervalued. Like, I've thought for years that nurses should be paid more.
About a risk to life. The risk is that we don't have enough nurses and we're not attracting enough people into the profession. And actually, one day strike versus 12 years of deterioration of their work pay and conditions, actually, I think the risk to life is far greater from the government not actually listening to the nurses.
So let's pick up on that point about the government not listening, because I think we should deal with that. It's been pretty apparent for quite a while that Steve Barclay, the health secretary, has declined to actually partake in negotiations. Now, first of all, I think it's crap politics to do that with a profession that people highly value. You know, it's one thing to like...
You can't have a negotiation. If this process is about negotiating a settlement, and if strike is a failure, then the failure comes when you don't negotiate well.
Correct. Absolutely. 100% agree. I think the failure on the side of the nursing union is to have a number, a 19% rise, which is just so obviously not affordable in the current circumstances. I would love to give nurses a 19, 20% rise. I think they fully deserve it, but it's not affordable in the current circumstances.
A, I think that's bullshit, because frankly, all that 19% does is take them back to the standard of living they had in 2010. B, it's actually not that much money, because nurses are so poorly paid that 19% is not that much on top of it. C, let's face it, 19% is a negotiating position. And we've seen in Scotland that if you come to a discussion of fair pay now and fair pay in the future, that you can get to a position that it can be agreed. So I think it's having a 19% might be a stretch target, but it's not a stretch target that's completely unrealistic, actually.
It might not. Well, the other point about this is it might not be, if it was just nurses, you might be able to find a solution for some of the reasons you've said. I think there's also a problem that if everyone who is currently on strike got the pay rises they wanted, what do you think would happen to, say, inflation?
Well, honestly, not that much, because inflation...
No, that can't be right.
That can be right, Charlotte. It's not the 1970s. We are not in a pay inflation spiral. At the moment, private sector pay is significantly higher and going up significantly higher year on year than public sector pay. And that hasn't been what's caused inflation. So it's actually the idea that we get into an inflationary wage spiral is actually deeply contested. And it's just folk memory of the 1970s when it was a very, very different circumstance.
I don't see how millions or a million, it's about a million people, isn't it, covered by these strikes, getting...
One in 60.
Right. Yeah. I don't see how that gets... I mean, again, it would depend slightly on what the rise was. If, you know, you made the point about nurses in Scotland, which was about, what did they get to, 7.5% in the end with the negotiations?
I think it's 7.5% for most people and 9% for the lowest paid.
Okay. So, you know, that has a significantly less effect. And yes, you're right, 90% is probably a negotiating position. But again, these things do, have to be paid for, and do have some effect on the broader economy. And I don't want to be so facetious.
They just don't have anything like as much an effect on the broader economy as Liz Truss going, hey, let's cut everyone's tax. Woo!
No, I strongly disagree. Because not least because that was walked back within 6 weeks.
Well, yeah, but that 6 weeks absolutely crashed our economy.
For a brief period of time, it caused chaos. I don't think anything that's happening now really pertains to what happened in that 3 weeks.
But you know, I'm terrified about what's my mortgage is going to be when I get off my fixed rate. And thank fuck I'm on one.
Yeah, no, I think we discussed that. We discussed that when during the autumn statement that, you know, I have similar feelings to you when I next check what mortgage my mortgage rate. But yeah, and you know, you and I are lucky to have mortgages, you know, not have to deal with buy to let renters and whatever.
Absolutely.
So yeah, and I think actually just before I stop all my resentments, I do think there is something rather nasty about, and I understand why it's happening at this time of year, because it's the moment of kind of maximum power. It's probably the moment where the unions have calculated there'll be maximum pressure on the government to get it sorted. Because frankly, after the last 2 years, everyone just wants a nice, peaceful Christmas, don't they? That's the truth of it.
It's not happening at Christmas because it's Christmas. It's happening at this time of year because that's the point of the pay negotiations that we've reached.
Sure, but it's obviously doing stuff that is directly affecting what people want to do at this time of year, when you could have done it earlier in the year before.
You know who people also are? Nurses.
Sure, some people are, yeah.
And they're the railway workers.
Yeah, well, we said one in 60, didn't
all
we?
Of these people are also affected by strikes, but they have to make this decision because this is the point they've got to in the pay negotiations.
Yep. And I
the idea that these people are separate from the general public.
No, isn't that's not correct. That no, you we have and like. I also reject the idea when, I mean, I've definitely said it facetiously when I've been cross, but you know, when you say my taxes pay for nurses, nurses pay taxes as well. Doctors pay, public sector workers pay taxes. So I want to, you know, I won't make such a facetious point. There's something quite interesting happening this morning, because obviously the morning we're recording this is the beginning, as I said, of 48 hours of RMT strikes, the biggest rail union. It's quite interesting comments from the head of that union, Mick Lynch, who's bizarrely taken on a bit of cult status. Anyway, we don't need to discuss that. I think he's getting slightly nervous of the public feelings, because he's sort of doing this. It won't really affect Christmas. You know, we do a bit of engineering on Christmas anyway. This is just a bit early. It's okay. I do think there's a little bit of worry, and I think there's a little bit of concern from the unions that the public might turn. Now, we haven't seen much evidence of that yet. If you look at polling, particularly younger people tend to be leaning towards the strike action. A lot of people, interestingly, from a bit of polling I looked at, because just believe it or not, I do sometimes prepare for this show. Yeah. No, there seem to be generally support for things up to strikes. And actually, I would probably be in that, you know, I would be in that category in lots of ways. You know, if you want to work to rule, I think that's perfectly reasonable. If you don't want to take overtime because you feel it's not paid appropriately and doesn't suit you, I think that is a perfectly reasonable position to have. And it's for your bosses and all the government to sort that out. I think that's perfectly reasonable.
You have the right to do a bunch of things. We just don't want you to do them.
No, I think you can, as I say, you don't want to take overtime because you think it's not right and you want to work to rule.
You know, if train drivers stopped doing overtime, we'd probably have no trains at the weekend. Because...
Correct, yeah. And if that's what they want to do, that, you know, to make the point, fine. I think that is part of your contract. You're not obliged to work overtime. I think that's for the train companies to sort.
I mean, the train company, I mean, the whole system is...
Yeah, let's not try and unpick that, because it's... we'd be here all day, how the train... And also how each... We'd have to go through how each line works. So, you know, that would be impossible, because each
bit...
Don't.
That's the problem. And they don't work individually and they don't work as a system.
Yeah, I mean, we could spend most of the show recounting terrible train experiences we've had, I imagine.
I mean, we could, but it's bigger than our individual experiences. It's a system that doesn't work, set up in a way that didn't work in the first place, and constantly meddled with because essentially they can't accept that the system doesn't work.
I mean, yes, because it clearly does not work. you know, I've sat on buses on a Sunday. I've sat for hours on cold platforms. Yeah, the system...
And I keep going out with blokes who don't live in London, which is stupid of me.
Well, that's your own fault. I mean, that's not me. Mick Lynch can't solve that for you, babe.
I don't know. Where does he live? But, endless bloody trains to the northwest or the north.
Oh, no, this is your own fault. You made critical errors in this.
It is my own fault. I accept this.
Just while we're on the trains, actually, there's another interesting thing. You know, I think it's been the trains and the nursing unions that have really attracted most public attention for pretty obvious reasons. You know, people are irritated and inconvenienced by the Royal Mail, again, particularly at this time of year, but it hasn't seemed to capture the public attention in the way these two have. What's quite interesting is we know what the negotiating position of the RCN. We don't really know what specifics of what the RMT want. This is Mick Lynch on today. He said that, you know, he was on the BBC today and said wouldn't give a specific number of what the pay rise they wanted was. He said there's been an exchange of views, but that's really it. We don't really know.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because you're cross that you know the number from the RCM, but you're also cross that you don't know the number.
I'm not cross with either of those. And I just think it's an interesting contrast. And I don't know quite. So I think the number from the RCN is sadly unrealistic. And I'm interested that I don't know what that presumably.
I mean, the thing with the train drivers is it's very much not simply a pay dispute.
No, it isn't. It's
very much a terms and conditions dispute. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why there isn't an iconic number that we can all point to in the way we can with the RCN. Mm. Although the RCN is a pay and conditions dispute too, it's primarily a pay dispute, whereas yes. that's true of the RMT. And they very much don't want this to simply be about a figure that they should be paid more, because it is much more focused on their pay terms and conditions.
Yeah, things like staffing levels, overnight conditions.
Yeah.
This is the quote from McLynch. We've asked for a substantial increase in pay. We don't put a figure either publicly or to the employers in our claims. Now, I can understand not putting it into the public. And frankly, it doesn't really matter if I know the number or not. I'm not sitting in the room negotiating with him. I'm slightly surprised that the employees don't know a specific number. Or am I missing something?
I mean, it's two different negotiating tactics, isn't it? I think there is... particularly with train drivers and the workers beyond just the drivers.
Yes, I'm glad you made that point, because it's not just about drivers who it tends to focus on, and they tend to have a pretty reasonable salary comparatively. This is about, as I understand it, train cleaners,
train operators, yeah. signalmen, which we absolutely can't run the railways without. You know, these are all sorts of workers that are on all sorts of different pay levels. There are two ways of negotiating, and I remember this from my telesales day. Either you're in really high, expecting to be negotiated down, and there's actually a number in your head that you don't mention out loud, but you know where you can land on, or you don't say anything at all and you let the other side fill that space and then negotiate them up from it.
Yeah. This is a quote from Rishi Sunak. I mean, I think... the criticism of Steve Barclay that he's not doesn't seem to be engaging in good faith with the RCN. I think that is true. This is what the Prime Minister said this morning on BBC News Northern Ireland. He said the Health Secretary has always been clear that his door is always open for talks. We want to be reasonable. We want to be constructive. I have to say, whatever my feelings about strikes, I think that's a bit disingenuous.
It is, because they don't want to be reasonable. They don't want to be constructive. They want, and if you look at the email that's gone out this morning from the Conservative Party to its supporters trying to tie this to Labour, they're not trying to be constructive with the unions. They're trying to make this a political problem for the Labour Party.
Right. I want to talk about that, and I want to talk about the politics of this kind of coordinated action. But we've been disagreeing a bit this morning, which is fine. That's what we do on this show. But there is some... Exactly. Hang on, what did you say?
I said that's what we're here for.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I thought I said that's because I'm always wrong. I thought you told me that's because I'm always wrong, which, you know.
And you are always wrong.
I mean, it's a valid point, you know, that many people would make on many different topics. But there is something you and I very, very, very firmly agree on.
Absolutely.
And that is that Crisis at Christmas is a wonderful organisation that I hope many of our listeners will support in whichever way possible. You know, there's a standard Crisis at Christmas donation, which really helps fund their wonderful work, which they set up centres every Christmas to get people off the street in Christmas, over the Christmas period, try and warm them up, you know, give them haircuts, clean them up, give them Christmas dinner, all those wonderful things. Now, I have to be honest, I've only managed to make donations, which go towards that.
Which
Emma,
is
essential. Yeah, I'm always delighted to give my money to it, because I think it's a wonderful, wonderful cause. Emma, being the significantly better person in this double act, has for the last few years... for the last few years, you have actually helped in the running of these centres. I wondered if you could tell our listeners a bit about it.
So I didn't, sadly, I wasn't able to do it over the pandemic, but for 4 or 5 years before that, I was a general volunteer. Which means that you do what you're told. And that can be everything from what's called gap duty, which is where you literally sit in a gap. Quite often crisis centres are in schools or hotels this year. And there are going to be places where the guests aren't allowed to go. So you get two volunteers and they sit in the gap and say, nope, you can't go down that corridor. I am the world's best dinner lady, as it turns out. I love scraping plates. That's one of my favourite jobs.
Do you know what? This doesn't surprise me at all. I can see you making that work.
And actually, for the last couple of years that I did it, there was a lot of illness, which is obviously going to happen. And so I got roped into being in the shift office, which is where it's like the hub. You run everything, you sort of, they need bin bags, we haven't got enough of this, someone's kicking off over there. I've now officially succumbed to what is clearly the inevitable, and I'm now going to just be a shift office coordinator with a walkie-talkie. Very exciting.
One should ever give you that level of power.
I mean, it's just the best thing that's ever happened to me, obviously. But so I will be doing, I think it's 6 or 7 shifts over the Christmas period. One of the lovely things, you mentioned the things that happen for guests. One of the key things, they need is sleep. I mean, that is just primary, because they do not sleep well on the streets. So we give them a bed and the ability to just get some blooming kip. There's a joke that we always make amongst us volunteers that when we arrive at the beginning, we come in all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and the guests are, tired, bedraggled. They haven't had a shower, they haven't had a haircut for a while. By the time that the whole thing ends, the volunteers are knackered. They've been doing lots and lots of 10-hour shifts. Meanwhile, the guests have had manicures and haircuts. They've got brand new clothes. They have had some sleep. So the balance between what we all look like is very much evened up or evened away by the end of it.
It's a wonderful charity. It's a wonderful cause. If you go to crisis.org.uk, it's very, very easy to make a donation. The default ones start from £29.07, but you can put in whatever donation.
Now pays for one guest for their whole stay, I believe. So
that's but you can put in whatever amount you feel comfortable putting in. So it's a wonderful thing. I will make sure the link is in the show notes. And as I say, I hope our listeners can support this wonderful cause in whatever way they can. Right. After that moment of uplifting and, united front, let's talk about the political implications of this. The bit I don't like about this coordinated action, and you're right that obviously things are going to build up as the year goes on. I understand that. But there is also something political and coordinated about this, I feel.
I think it would be illegal for them to coordinate strikes.
It doesn't have to be done so blatantly.
That's quite a strong accusation. There is no, you can't coordinate strikes between different unions. All the unions have taken their own internal ballots as to whether they're going to strike or not.
And we should say some have failed. The Royal College of Midwives didn't get over the turnout threshold. The number of people who voted would have been enough. It was over 50% of those who voted, but they didn't have 50% of the union vote. So the Royal College of Midwives at the moment will not be striking. And you're absolutely right. Yes, they did all take the internal vote. But the wave of it, even if it's not actually coordinated, obviously there's a pretty weak Conservative government that unions feel they can probably... They think they can push it over the edge a bit if there's a real difficult winter. There's something I think that feels a bit undemocratic, is probably a bit of a strong word. But I don't think...
It's not just about voting. You have a democratic right to strike.
Yes, you absolutely do.
They keep mincing on about these independent pay bodies. Well, they have a process, and that process happens at the same time for every public sector worker every year, and that's why it's all happening at the same time. If they want to stagger those independent pay bodies, that's up to them.
Do you truly and genuinely believe there's not a bit of emboldenment across the union movement as more of these strikes votes go ahead?
And I think there passed. Is a breaking point that public sector workers have come to as a whole. And yes, of course, the unions are not stupid. They know that this is a moment where they could have the maximum impact for their members, which is their job. So, yeah, of course, they're going to take strike action at the moment they think it could be most effective. I'm quite happy to pay my union dues for that to happen.
And then we also should talk about the Labour response. Now, to me, the Labour Party response has been sort of classic Keir Starmer fence sitting.
Yes.
Never mind picket. He seems to have a picket fence up his arse with this because he's sitting on the fence. So he's
nearly nervous that Rishi Sunak's attack line that this is a Labour strike is going to catch on. I think that they should be less nervous about that. And they should, A, take on when the Tories lie about it. For example, the RMT disaffiliated from Labour, I think something like 18 years ago, and have no intention of coming back. B, they should also say, yeah, and I think, to be fair, Keir Starmer did lead on nurses' pay at PMQ. So he has started taking a slight...
He did lead on that and bring that up. What he did, though, and this is why I sort of think he's fence-sitting, is he blamed the government, said this is Rishi Sunak's strike, this is a government strike, it's a shame on the government. We've discussed the way the government has failed in these negotiations. But he also didn't really say whether he backed the strikes and whether he, if he was the Prime Minister, he would meet the demands of any of the unions.
I find this such an interestingly bad line from the Tories. Rishi Sunak constantly going, well, what would you do if you were Prime Minister? It's all very well at the moment to get the backbenchers roaring in PMQs, but the framing is because you're going to be in a year and a half.
No, I mean, we've always seen government parties do this to the opposition. I don't think that's right.
I think it absolutely plays into the weakness of Rishi Sunak. Well, what would you do? Well,
I can't agree.
It's your job. Get on with it. Do it. Stop being pathetic.
I mean, that is absolutely true. This is a government problem to fix, as is always the thing in government. But also, the luxury of opposition is that you don't have... There's not many good things about being in opposition.
The luxury of opposition is a weird old phrase.
No, there's not much good about being in opposition. But one of the luxuries it does afford you is that you don't really have to say what you would do. And I don't think it is unreasonable to ask the leader of the opposition, particularly when the leader of the opposition is from the Labour Party with its connections to the trade union movement. I don't think that is unreasonable. I do think that's fair enough to push it on that.
I think it's a reasonable question to ask. It's just a pathetic one if it's the only response that you've got, which is where the Sunak government is at the moment.
Yeah, I think we should also make the point when I'm talking about the political motivations of it. The trade unions obviously also know that this is, you know, it's not a government in a particularly strong position. It's settled a bit since the chaos of the Liz Truss weeks, but it's not exactly a strong, emboldened government. I've even seen things from Conservative MPs who are getting a bit twitchy about the government's reaction to the strikes, because the government obviously thought, and I'm not sure they're going to be, they might be proved right medium term, that they could ride this out and that the public would turn on the bodies that are striking. I think to do that wholesale might be wrong. So I think, for example, you might see resentment towards the RMT where you don't see it against the RCN or ambulance workers. For example, because, I mean, I absolutely include myself in this. Frankly, I've already said that I think nurses are underpaid and undervalued, and I think most people who have ever had any interaction with, say, a hospital know how wonderful the nurses can be and, you know, in often cases rely on the nursing more frequently than the doctors. And I think we all know, I mean, I certainly include myself in this, I could not make it. If I got 20 through 20 minutes of a nursing shift, I'd be amazed at myself. I mean, I think I'd probably max out about 10. So,
absolutely. No, I mean, it's incredibly hard work on your feet most of the day. We talk about how awful it is that kids go to school hungry, but we've got nurses going to work to do these vital shifts hungry.
Yeah, there's stories of nurses using food bags.
Seven country. That's disgusting.
I mean, you will get no argument from me on that. As I say, look, you and I have agreed on lots of the principles. I just find strike action in most cases. I find it difficult to get my head around, even though I do not think anyone should take away your right to do it. And I can understand why that sounds like something of an incoherent position, but that's sort of where I am.
You sound a bit Keir Starmer there, my love.
No, I mean, maybe a bit. I just...
A bit fancy. You can do it, just please don't.
No, I mean, there is a bit of that. But also, I do think there is a... I mean, if I wanted to flip it on my head, I would say from some means there's also a bit of a bullying approach, you know, a kind of give us what we want or we'll make life for the country very difficult. And I
that's literally their job. That's why strike action happens.
I mean, yeah, it doesn't mean I have to like
it. Fluffy strike that people do.
No, but I don't have to like it, though, just because it's their job. There's lots of people that do jobs I don't have to like.
You don't know. You don't have to like it. But the idea that it's bullying rather than their job is bonkers.
No, it's not. I don't think it's right. There's a sort of... I do think in some of the cases that it is bullying.
You say, not going to work if you don't get paid is bullying.
No. I don't think that's bullying. I would say that would be bullying from the bosses if you're not getting paid. But I don't like this kind
of... If you're not getting paid well or properly.
Again, that's a slightly relative thing, isn't
then
it?
Then you don't go to work. I wonder what that's called.
I mean, you could be sarcastic about it, but that is absolutely not what's going on here. What is going on here is after a very difficult few years, a bunch of unions are sort of, I mean, I don't want to use that phrase, but it is bullying. It is making life for ordinary people, for example, with the RMT strikes, who do you think's affected by it? It's not you and I, the laptop class. It's other equivalent workers. You can't get to their jobs.
Yeah, there's always paid workers aren't getting trains because no one can afford to under this system.
Well, that's a whole different issue. You're quite right. But, people...
What you're talking about is the commuter class, which are not that low.
No, it is the commuter class who are fine because most of us can work from home for a day or two. It is the people that have to go to shops, to the service industry. The people that I assume these unions are meant to show some solidarity with that are affected by their strike action. Because they can't travel.
That's just not true.
Of course it's true.
Certainly in cities, the lowest paid are getting buses rather than trains. Outside of cities, the trains are bullshit. And actually most people unfortunately drive because we've got an appalling rail system. It is not.
So you're saying nobody in the service and industry travels by train?
More middle class people who get trains than working class.
But they're more middle class. Okay.
Working class people are more likely to work close to home. They are more likely to get buses rather than trains when they live in cities.
But the level of disruption that causes to those type of people is huge. That's undeniable.
No, it's not. I literally just denied it because I'm saying that in terms of who it's affecting, the reason that the columnist class is up in arms because it's them who it's affecting.
No, it's not because they just stay at home for a day or two. They're just people who
can't get. I mean, one of the funniest things I saw in effect. Oh no, the rail strikes have left the pubs empty in the city of London. Oh no, the bankers aren't getting wankered at lunch. Oh no.
Well, no one did.
I'm an actual Tory MP. I mean, for God's sake.
I mean, I don't think there's much drinking going on at lunch anymore. I don't know if you know how the city of London works, but.
That Tory MP does.
Well, no, I don't think that because what. But actually, there's an illustrative point. I mean, first of all, the service injuries had been battered for 2 years by lockdowns and the fallout from COVID. So actually, you can mock what happened in the City of London. But if there are any parts of the service industry that have lose at the most critical time of year for them, losing income for whatever reason, that is appalling. Yeah. This is not showing solidarity.
It also is not the unions that represent completely different workforces.
Well, it is if your action just causes that disruption.
No, it's not. It's because the government have been shit and haven't actually made it so that that disruption doesn't happen in the first place.
Well,
I'm not taking the idea that Mick Lynch is responsible for some poor bartender.
But his action has a fallout for that bartender.
No, the government's lack of action has a fallout for that bartender.
Well, as we said at the top of the show, that a strike is the failure on both sides.
Strike? No, you said that at the top of the show.
Yeah, I did.
A strike action is a perfectly valid action if the government fails to get to where it needs to be.
I just think that if you think you're showing solidarity with working people and you're costing them money, income, shift patterns. That's no solidarity at all.
No, I don't think that's fair, because I think a lot of those people,
I'm sure you don't, but
people are absolutely showing solidarity with the workers on strike because they're the ones supporting them. It's the middle class mincers who aren't supporting them.
Well, I think there are plenty of lefty Islington middle classes who think it's all very wonderful while they sit at home and make their own coffee and sit on their laptop for a day or two. But anyway, that's a slightly different point to the one I'm making. Anyway, we have had a busy show. I knew this was going to be a packed one. I think there's so much going on that I'm glad we got to unpick at least some of it. I think next week we'll come back for a nice, uncontroversial show and we'll enjoy a look back at the year, because it's been a pretty crazy year in politics. I think there'll be a lot for us to do, to look back on, because it's been rather a lot that's happened. So, Emma, thank you for joining me. As always, where can people keep up with you?
I'm on Twitter far too often at @EmmaBurnell_, and you can read my newsletter, Hard Thinking on the Soft Left, on Substack.
Wonderful. I'm Charlotte Henry, and I'm at Charlotte A. Henry on Twitter. And if you want a newsletter from me, it's theedition.substack.com. And I hope you'll join me there. And I look forward to seeing you for our roundup of the year next week.